Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and welcome to the Jazz on the Tube Cuban Music Podcast. This is something we've been doing now for an entire year. Every week, some new material, new videos, new history. And if you're not signed up for it, go ahead and do that because you're really missing out. Not because the show's so great, but because the music is so great and the history is so great. And today we're going to talk with somebody who's been one of the greatest advocates for Latin music in North America, really the world, but a very critical person in this field. And we're really happy to have him, and he's going to help us fill in some really important blanks in the story. Welcome, Martin Cohen.
Thank you, Ken, for inviting me to this conference call.
I just want to give a really very brief background on Martin. Among other things, he's the founder of Latin Percussion. And here's how I'm going to explain Latin percussion to people. If you're a musician, you already know Latin percussion. If you're not, you might not know. So let me read this quote to you. You can really send a message on Martin's drums. And that's from Tito Puente. You can't get a more credible source when it comes to Latin music than Tito Puente. And the thing that he said there, sending a message, because the drums are about sending a message. They're not something you just bang on. There's a tremendous amount of subtlety in high-level drumming. And that's something that we've been teaching in the course. And again, if you haven't signed up for it, do sign up. It's quite interesting. It's quite ear-opening. So Martin is the person that created that very important business. When the blockade of Cuba started, there was a shortage of instruments, Latin instruments in New York. The supply just dried up, and he stepped into the breach and figured out how to make them and make them at a very, very high level. And of course, you know, it's like they're like violins. You know, you have to have a good violin. The violinist needs the best possible violin. It's an art to design them. It's an art to make them. And Martin mastered that. But today I want to talk with him about two things. He's got another venture called Congahead.com, which we're going to talk about. But before we get to that, I want to talk about his experience of life, because he experienced something that I was doing some calculations that pretty much you have to be around 75 years old or over to have experienced what he experienced. And, you know, not everybody's that age, not everybody had that experience. And we want to find out what it was like. There was a time, you know, everybody knows Birdland. Everybody in jazz knows all about Birdland. But a block north, I believe, we're going to confirm that, there was another club called the Palladium Ballroom, which was a heavily Latin club. And having these two clubs close together created for some amazing synergies. Now, you can't go to either of those places anymore. They're gone. But what you can do is hear the story of people that experienced them. So, Martin, can you tell us about your experience as a listener at Birdland, as a listener at the Palladium, and why those two clubs were so important?
Well, I started going to Birdland while I was going to college. And after I got out of college, I was going there as well. I had already been smitten with the Latin rhythms, but more focused on Latin jazz, which was my first experience in Birdland, Monday night jam sessions, first hearing Cal Jader there, which was a Latin jazz of great significance. And I don't know what brought me. I think it was because the only way I was really going to consistently get input on the Latin instruments, the drums I was making, was going to be in Birdland. So when I went there, it was Tito Puente playing, Eddie Palmieri, Tito Rodriguez. The bands were so awesome, Machito. It just converted me into a Latin music lover, not just Latin jazz. But, I basically went to Birdland and almost don't think I ever went back. I went to Palladium, but I don't think I ever went back to Birdland. It just took all my time and attention. I was raising a family, I had a day job, and building drums in my basement at night. So that consumed me.
Interesting. I imagine there was a lot of cross-pollination between the audiences, between Birdland and the Palladium. And I imagine jazz guys checked out the Palladium and Palladium guys checked out Birdland.
Well, that's the same thing I've heard, but it really wasn't my experience. I was on the fringes of both areas. I wasn't a jazz person. I was young. I was like a very early 20s and when I started going to the Palladium. And so I really wasn't like part of both scenes. I was part of neither. So I couldn't speak to the cross-pollinization, though I know it just from writings about history, it did exist, but I didn't.
Gotcha.
And
they were
in my own world.
Okay. Fair enough. But they were physically close to each other, right?
Yeah, I think I'm blocked. I can't be sure. Right now, Birdland is a gentleman's club called Flash Dancers. You can see it advertised on top of taxis. But that was the origin of my Latin jazz experience that changed my life.
Gotcha. And at the Palladium, for the people that have never, that, you know, didn't experience and can't experience because it's long gone, what was the scene like? How big was it? What was going on there besides the great music?
It's really hard in today's terms to say how big it was. You know, recollections can be very deceiving. But I have to say I entered the Palladium after they had lost their liquor license. So its greatest days, you know, without a liquor license, you can't be making money.
Sure.
So that their greatest days preceded my entry into the scene, which was probably 1963.
Okay. And they lost that license in 61, I think.
All right, so it really wasn't as robust a scene. But what I will say about it that I guess made it significant was it did have a variety of ethnic groups, from Jews to Italians to blacks to, you know, mostly Puerto Rican. I think the Cuban population was low at the time, and the Latin population wasn't that significant in 63. But it represented the coming together. Maybe it was on a Wednesday night, a dance contest night, where of all ethnicities, they joined in the contest. I don't find it so much anymore where you'll find different ethnicities. I think it was the Jewish middle class of New York would go up to the Catskills in the mountains to vacation. And the Latin bands, the high-end Latin bands, were brought up to the top hotels in the Catskills. And, you know, Jews had this relationship between the contest on Wednesday night in the Palladium, the clubs in there were clubs, I think, in Long Beach, Long Island. I was not a part of that scene, nor was I high-end hotels in the Catskill Mountains, but Latin bands did go up there, and I had my first work experience in the Catskills, but like almost out of it, in a place called Roscoe, New York, where they didn't have bands. If they had any bands, that weren't of significance, but they did play cha-cha-cha, and they had some couple there at the hotel that would teach dancing, Latin dancing. Not high-end, but nonetheless, it nurtured my interest in the music. And when I got out of, when I went back to school and I had some money from my busboy work that summer, I bought my first sound system, which had to be assembled, both the electronics and the, my first Latin record was Cha Cha Cha, which had an Aragon tune on it, and, you know, just, and some jazz and Max Roach and, but I continued to mix the jazz thing with Latin thing as I got more deeply involved in Latin music, exactly, and, well, also Latin jazz, yeah.
And then at a certain point, you took a stab at creating your own bongo, set of bongo drums.
Well, I think it started with a Monday night at the Latin jazz jam session that may have been like headed up by Herbie Mann with Frank West, Chino Pozo, Jose Mangual, and Candido. But it was Jose Mangual that really made an impression on me when I saw him play the bongos. He was just the best. So I thought someday become a Jose Mangual. But I went to buy a pair of bongos and at the three shops on 48th Street in Manhattan, which was the music district. I realized that the only way I would get a pair of bongos like he was playing was to make them myself. and I set out asking questions of all those who I could ask the question of how it's made, what it's made from. I borrowed a pair of bongos from Mungo, and actually when I was ready to make the bongo, I had returned the bongos to Mungo, and I went to Johnny Pacheco's house, who he had a pair of the Cuban bongos. I measured it, and that became the prototype for what was my first bongo.
Would you say there was a lot of work for Latin musicians in the 50s and 60s, early 60s, and maybe it fell off in the 60s?
Well, I can only speak to, you know, my time, and that really began when I was graduating from school in January of 1961, went to work and started making the rounds of clubs then. So I can speak only of that period.
Sure.
And I was, well, one of my early influences was Johnny Rodriguez Jr., Dandy. He was just emerging on the scene. He was 16 years old, and he was starting to work with everybody, recording with everyone. I guess it was robust. It was so robust. It wasn't the distraction of YouTube, so if you wanted music, you had to either buy a physical copy of it or go out to a club.
And the rock and roll wave hadn't fully hit hard, because my impression of the history is that when rock came, it kind of washed away a lot of other musics. I don't know if that's accurate or not accurate. And, it became rock or nothing in a lot of venues.
Well, in a certain way, as I emerged, it was Latin or nothing. So I really wasn't aware of much other music except the jazz scene. But as I got focused on building instruments, that was really, it occupied all of my time.
Got you. And for listeners, as I pointed out at the beginning of the call, these are magnificent instruments, and all the players want them. Tito Puente's quote again, that you can really send a message on Martin's drums. I mean, that's the highest praise I think anybody can say about drum, that it can send a message. That you can.
I never heard it, but that was nice of him.
Yeah, I'll have to figure out where I got that quote from. So let's talk a little about your current venture, which I love, which is CongaHead.com.
More accurately, what we are putting our greatest effort in is the YouTube channel. And so it's youtube.com/ CongaHead. It was started about 10 years ago as a way of, when I was with LP and still driving the company, it was a way of evaluating new designs of products from a sonic level, not just by recording it and listening to it by itself, but in the context of a band and how it was used. That was the concept during the early primitive days of YouTube, where you had to scrunch down the file in order to upload it. And, you know, I started doing them in the LP office, and then as people, or the marketing people of the time, started doing their own productions, I felt it would be best I take this production into my home, and we created a studio in my house, where we have created, right now it's over 900 videos.
Incredible.
And my video, my channel, my home, my studio is the destination, the place where musicians from all over the world that play Latin music, even Baltic music, even variations of just high-end music want to come. It's really a destination. People come from Cuba. They want to play here. Bands from Buenos Aires, Argentina, that play before stadiums, come and sing to the wall in my studio in my home, because it's become so popular. And through the help of my engineer and producer, Javier Reyes, the sounds are so good. The 4K video is so, like, lifelike, that they want to be a part of these productions.
Mm. and 900 of them, and they're available for free for anybody that's interested in pursuing this music and seeing the very top musicians. And what Martin's saying is absolutely true. It's mind-boggling, the musicians that appear in these programs. Anybody, basically anybody living that I can think of in the Latin world who you'd want to see, you can see in Martin's basement playing this great music. You had the Muñequitos de Matanzas, for example. That's just one that comes to mind. If you go and visit, and please do this, go to the YouTube channel for congahead.com. And what Martin is saying is absolutely true. If you know anything about Latin music at all, you are going to be mind-boggled by the height of people who show up at Martin's basement to be filmed and recorded for Congahead. It's an amazing thing. And you were talking about people from Cuba coming to record. I know you have some video of the Muñequitos de Matanzas in your basement, which is just amazing. Now, you've also, did you go to, I've seen videos on your channel from Cuba. Did you personally go to video to Cuba and produce those?
Yes, we were there 2 Aprils ago. That would be 15, I think. Yeah, I guess it was 15. I don't know. Maybe it was 15. We went to Cuba, and we did go to Matanzas and to the house of the Muñequitos, and we went to a performance of theirs. They were very kind to us and fun, and they were remembering that in the early 90s when they were here, I gave them a lot of gear, which is now tired and old. I can't speak for the owners of LP as to whether they're going to refresh their gear, but they're the greatest disciples of the Afro-Cuban experience, and they were very generous. And when they came to my house, first time the rumba started in the kitchen. They couldn't wait to get into the recording room. It was, it was just the way the rumba is everywhere in Cuba.
Beautiful, beautiful. Did you have a chance to see any other musicians when you were in Cuba?
Well, we saw Alexander Abreu and Havana de Vimera. Samuel Formel sat in. One of the bands that we see. We saw Jorge Luis Pacheco, a monster keyboard player there, and with Alto Santana. Our time there wasn't that long, so we saw lots of groups, rumba bands, names of which I don't know.
Sure. Have you had much opportunity to go to Cuba over the years?
I've been there. The first time I went was in 79 and 2015. Basically, I'm just so busy all the time that I think traveling for the most part is just unproductive. I get so much done. And of course, Kent, I have to say that this whole endeavor was driven not only by my love of the Latin rhythm, but my camera, which has been the constant in my life. Well, started at the age of 12, I'm 78 now, and really picked up as I was able to afford to buy film when I got out of college, even though it wasn't really fresh factory spool film. It was something I had to re-spool myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I started taking photographs consistently around 1962. So I've been doing this ever since, and every time there's a new high-resolution camera that comes out, I seem to find the money to buy it, and I wish the computer speed was to keep up with the needs of these high-resolution files. But I continue to be driven and focus a lot of my time on photo editing.
Okay.
Does the video editing and the audio editing. I do the photography.
I've heard that you have an amazing collection of photographs over the decades. It must be extraordinary. Do you ever have a thought of putting them in a book?
Yeah, well, that we're working on, but with the constant activity in the studio, there's always an interruption of a session coming up tomorrow. It was a surprise session, and we're doing a Baltic band, which sounds a real departure from Tito Puente and the Palladium, but I fell in love with Baltic music when this Greek bass player, Panayotis, said, you got to check out the New York Gypsy All-Stars. And they became the sort of the rock stars of our channel. We've had many, but such an outlier of Baltic music. So we're very high on Baltic music here at Bungahead.
You know, the connection's not always clear. Are you saying Balkan music?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it was interesting. I was down when last time I was in Cuba. I met a young guy, a trombonist, and he was obviously in Cuba to soak up the Cuban scene, but he was also very high on Balkan music and had been going over there as well to learn what he could and experience what he could. It's very rhythmically driven music as well, and I think also it's still integrated into daily life there. I'm sure if you go to a party or a wedding, you're going to hear that kind of music, or you have an opportunity to hear that kind of music. Just as in Cuba, you have a good chance of still hearing live musicians at social events, whereas in the States, we're a little bit more towards the DJ and the sound system. In the Balkans and in Latin America, you're still going to have a chance to hear live people playing for the dancers, which is, I think, one of the things that makes the music so great.
Well, it could be that as the internet gets better and better in Cuba, live music will be in decline because YouTube will take over.
Yeah, it's for people that haven't been to Cuba. I can tell you, it's a land. It has internet, but the speeds are about what they were like in 93.
Yeah, dial-up.
And the people that I know, exactly. I mean, that weird sound that it used to make in the old days with a modem. That's what they still have. Very few people have internet at home. If I want my friends down there to see video, I just put it on a slip drive and bring the drive so that they can. And that's the Cuban internet. I don't know if you experienced it when you were down there, but literally people will come from New York or Miami with a big hard drive full of stuff, and they'll just share it with everybody, and it gets passed around literally by hand, and that's how people get things. We're working with a group down there. I know you know ISA, the Instituto Superior de Arte, which is their Juilliard, and they're restarting their jazz band. They used to have a jazz band, and it fell away, and now it's coming back. And so one of the things we're doing is providing them with as many videos as we can of different jazz musicians so they can see what – I think it helps to see what people are doing. We're also getting them scores. We just got them the score to all the parts to Manteca. So they're working on that now. Another project we're working on is Candido. Apparently, I talked to Bobby Sanabria about this, has not been back to Cuba in a long, long, long time. And we have a friend down there, Gilberto Valdez, he's 88 now, not a famous drummer, but he was a good workman-like jazz drummer, played with a lot of people, was in Europe for a long time, was back and forth between New York and the 40s. And he's the guy that brought Irakeri to New York. He was entrusted with, you know, being their manager by the government. And he also was Dizzy's host when Dizzy came in 77. So I told Gilberto this, and he said, let's try to get him here, you know. So he's working through government channels to try to get some kind of really formal, proper invitation to Candido to come as a hero.
95 years old, if not 96, I even forgot by now. And so while he works, he said he was retiring, but he continues to work. He has somebody that's very kind, this guy Roberto, who drives him around, he'll come with a taxi, pick him up in his wheelchair, go to the airport and take him like to the NAMM show. I don't know if he's still doing that. Well, it would be wonderful if you can bring him. I think he's maybe too old for that.
It'll be a challenge, and it's up to him, too, obviously. He is doing a gig in Toronto, June 6th, with Jane Bunnett. he's on the bill. He's part of the show, so he's still playing. I brought a friend. He did a show up at Hostos at the community college in the South Bronx, and I brought a friend who's really not plugged into this music at all, and Candido came out. He needed help to get seated, but once he was seated, he was there, and he just one slap on the conga, and my friend was like, I can't believe it. You know, the power, it resonated throughout the whole auditorium. And that's the reason we're having this call today is, you know, Martin has been such an advocate and fan of this music for decades and supporter of it. I wanted to get him on. And I want to encourage everybody, if you love jazz, there's a good chance you're going to love Latin music too. And it's just a matter of exposure and some education. And bit by bit, you're going to see that this is some of the finest music being produced anywhere on earth. Martin, do you have any, besides recommending that people go to the YouTube channel for Congahead, any specific recommendations of records or things, you know, must-have experiences for people that want to get into this music and find their way?
I'm not that kind of a maven. You know, I am a photographer mostly. I look for colorful people. I turn to my left and my right, where I usually have an expert. And judging from their reaction to somebody, I can get a sense of their importance. I really don't trust my judgment for somebody, you know, evaluating somebody who would come and record on my channel. And Javier takes care of that. I've been able to associate with the greatest, not because I have this here clearly defined taste and I'm a, you know, can judge them. I just had a way of hooking up with people who helped define the future. One of them, Patato, who was a street guy. And he attracted me more than others because he gave me street cred. Just, mm-hmm. you know, in his house in the late hours, in the early hours of the morning, where a rumba would be going on, and they were suspicious of this Jew in the crowd, and when he said to the others, I'm cool, he gave me the kosher stamp for life, and I was able to move in these circles without any difficulty. And very peculiar. I don't speak Spanish. I don't look like the part. And over all these years, I've become an accepted entity, resented maybe by a few, not many, for having made a success out of their culture. But I have worked extremely hard and continue to do so to this day. Maybe, well, I said I began doing this kind of thing in 62, and here it is. 2017, that's an awful long time. You're getting near 60 years. My love remains the same, and my desire to work hard remains the same. Maybe I don't work at the same speed, but I know my role. I'm not a tastemaker. I'm the one who does what others don't do, the hard work, the putting together things, the editing. If I do a session, it was just Memorial Day yesterday, we had like jam session here and family and great musicians, and you know, I have so many gigs of photographs that I have to edit. That's my job. Generation, maybe I'm working on it, at least the third three generations removed from my beginning, and just blessed to have the very best musicians from all over the world come to my studio.
Mm-hmm. So first, you know, making instruments for this world of the highest quality, and now documenting this beautiful outpouring of skill and creativity and passion that these musicians have. It's great. It's a great thing. And I really strongly encourage everybody, get to YouTube, look up congahead.com and dig in. You'll never get to the bottom of it. I mean, it's endless, but it'll be a fantastic education, and you'll be able to discover musicians that specifically move you. And, those of us who are interested in this, you know, we thank Martin for all this, these decades of amazing work. We're looking forward to more of what he does. So Martin Cohen, thank you so much for giving us the time and sharing some of your insights and your stories with us, and for producing the instruments, and then also producing the amazing Conga Head series, which goes on right now, you know.
Thank you for asking me. I appreciate it, and I hope your audience finds the story compelling and that they will visit the YouTube channel Congahead and enjoy the over 900 videos that exist. More recent ones in 4K and 24 channel Pro Tools audio that Javier Reyes puts together.
Great. Well, thanks again, Martin.